Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. Yes, folks, we are coming to you roughly 3 hours later than Rex and I were anticipating. That was because, Rex, we had quite a spectacle that's unfolded over the past couple hours here at Royal Birkdale. If you somehow missed it, this 154th Open Championship has been overshadowed and overwhelmed by, once again, Bryson DeChambeau, who was dinged two shots after officials determined after Bryson's second round that he had accidentally improved the area that was surrounding his ball on the fifth hole, turning what was a round of 66 into 68, turning what had been solo second place into a tie for fifth as we head into the weekend here at the Open. Rex, you've been covering golf a long time. Had you ever seen the hours-long saga that we just saw unfold here?
No, that was pretty surreal. I don't think I've ever seen that, and I don't think anyone has ever seen that, only because there have been plenty of situations where players have gotten penalties. There have been plenty of situations where the players maybe didn't agree with the penalty, and it was an extended conversation, and maybe the officials had to sit down and go to a video review. That takes a little bit of time. Even returning to the quote-unquote scene of the crime, like they did, I've never seen anything last that long. The initial... when he went into scoring, that was about 10 or 15 minutes. And then he came out, and you could tell something was going on because he was with all of the officials from the RNA. They got in a golf cart. They drove out to number five. That scene was surreal to the extreme because it was clear that Bryson DeChambeau was trying to plead his case. He was trying to convince the officials that he did not improve his lie intentionally or unintentionally. And the official could not have been more clear. This was unintentional. He improved essentially the line of his backswing. And I think Smiley Kaufman did a great job of this on live from sort of going back out to the spot and explaining that it was going to be a really hard shot either way. And so you can understand where his mindset was. And then they returned to the scoring trailer for 30 plus minutes. So this went on for more than an hour. I've never seen that. And I was talking with a member of his team. And I guess my only point in this is perhaps two strokes is egregious. Perhaps in his mind, he felt like he did not do anything. And I totally...
That's the rule. Improving your lies is two shots.
And I'm not even getting into that. I guess my part is any golfer in this field or any professional field will tell you that it's much better just to take the penalty. Because even if it's the perception that you did something wrong and you're fighting for it, that's just a bad look in golf. It's something you don't do. And Bryson did it for over an hour.
Clearly, he was vehemently opposed to what the ultimate ruling was. And again, intent really has nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. It is the fact that he was doing so and aiding what was the backswing that he was going to be making. If you miss it on the fifth hole, he drove it way right off the tee. Actually, so far right that he played a provisional. Spotters did find the ball. He was able to locate it, hacked from that point over the back of the green, chipped on and two-putted. It was the only bogey of the day that he made. And of course, we're going to be overshadowing what actually was an incredible round of golf that put him opportunity to win the Claire Jug for the first time. But officials notified Bryson after the round, so he had no idea that this was going on during the second round. Afterward, they notified him that that video evidence showed that he had improved it. He was stomping around the area behind the golf ball, and they ruled that he did not make the least intrusive path back to the golf ball. That is what was sort of the official ruling and why he received the two-shot penalty. Now, I think a lot of folks are going to be looking at that and say, look, there have been plenty of players over the past couple of years in the PGA Tour who have done something similar, where if you have a lie in the rough, it's a little bit gnarly, maybe take a fairway wood and mat it down a little bit, maybe you're stomping around it. It's Bryson who gets caught in the crossfire here. What did you make of his eventual reaction to it, which was clearly animated, it was clearly passionate, and even mouth to an official? We're going to get to this in a second. I'm not playing tomorrow if I'm going to be receiving this ruling.
Well, and members of his team said they don't know if he's going to play tomorrow. So this will be a drama until he either does or does not show up for his tee time tomorrow afternoon. And to be clear, he is still very much in this championship. We're only halfway through, he's playing some brilliant golf.
Three shots back.
On a golf course where he is excelling. He has turned around his fortunes after a really bad year in the major championships. It is stunning to hear a player. It was childish, point blank. I'm not about throwing names around. I'm not comfortable with that at all. I have never seen a situation where a player said, if I don't get my way, I'm not coming back. And that's essentially what he said. And I truly believe that he goes back to his home or his hotel tonight. And he decides that, no, that's not what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to eat this and I'm going to continue to play well and I'm going to win this championship. Use it as motivation. Don't be childish about it.
If Bryson is not going to play, he just went through what was a 48-minute range session that you and I were both out there for at Royal Birkdale, going through the bag, trying to work on
in the pitch dark positions. It gets dark late here, but it was in the pitch dark.
However, yeah, he wrapped up at about 10:28 p.m. local time. The only light that was on the driving range here was the illumination from the electronic leaderboard. He was on the far left side of the range. That was the only way he could see. About a half hour earlier, I couldn't even track the ball anymore. He went through the entire bag, hit his team of seven others around him. If he is not going to play on Saturday, he certainly didn't give any indication that with sort of the practice session and the regimen that he was going through. But yes, you're exactly right. DeChambeau's agent, Brett Falkoff, did say that Bryce was undecided. He'll decide on Saturday morning if he's officially going to play. He does not have to make that decision all the way up until his 3:30 p.m. local time tee time on Saturday. So I have a feeling it's going to be a whole
might have an emergency pod.
Will he or will he watch that'll be going on Saturday morning that I'm already not looking forward to?
Well, it's the drama that I think we can all do without. The tournament could probably do without. I would think Bryson could do without. And I think that range session was all about blowing off some steam, trying to take a breath, trying to sort of wrap your mind out around just what happened, maybe trying to come to grips with, okay, I'm going to take this two-stroke penalty. I'm going to use it as motivation. I'm going to move on. And when I say he was acting childish, I certainly understand how aggravating this must have been for him. He was playing, still is playing brilliant golf. And to get caught by this and suddenly get the wind knocked out of you, I think is the best way to put it, when he walked into scoring. I get it. I can empathize with from a human level how difficult that must have been. You never react with, okay, I'm not coming back in the morning. That's not the proper reaction.
It obviously is not the proper reaction. It was long. It was drawn out. It was in many ways performative, hopping on the golf cart, going back to the scene of the crime, animatedly waving his arms at one point, having his hands behind his back, listening like he was a good student, listening to what the rules official was telling him. We had roughly, I don't know, two or three dozen media members who were waiting outside the flash area trying to get some sort of comment from Bryson DeChambeau. He's asking, you know, how are you guys doing today? I'm going to go practice, when we were asking him repeatedly if he wanted to share his side of the story, his side of the saga. He said, nah, I'm good, letting his actions, which again, he was clearly vehemently opposed to what had gone on, tell the story. To me, that didn't feel like the right thing either. Because you have the RNA who's coming out and saying one thing, tell your side of the story. Why do you feel so strongly that you should not have been opposed to this? Again, I think we all understand it. It caught him by surprise. The reaction and the hours-long saga that this became was completely unnecessary. It was totally performative, and yet it was completely on brand for Bryson DeChambeau.
And let's go back to Thursday. We did this in last night's podcast. We spent a lot of time talking about it. He declined to talk to the media after a really good opening round. There was no reason to do that. You and I went in depth about the idea that, okay, you've gotten sideways with the media. You don't like the narrative right now that's out there about who you are as a person, who you are as a golfer. Here was an opportunity yesterday to step in front of a microphone and try to change that narrative, try to give your side of the story. You're absolutely right. Here was an opportunity for you to stand up. And I know you're emotional. And I know this was difficult, but this was hours after the fact. You've had time to unwind. There was so many reporters still waiting for him late into the night that he could have stopped and just had a conversation and given, this is what I was thinking. This is, I really don't think I did this. I'm going to take the penalty. I'm going to move on. I'm going to be motivated by this. He didn't do any of that. And I think it's such a missed opportunity. And again, since we're here, it's World Cup week. It's such an on goal.
I mean, he likes the attention. He likes the show. He likes the power, knowing that with every action, he has a horde of media who is there to capture it and want to hear from him. I think he enjoys that process, especially for a player who, outside of 4 weeks a year, really doesn't get that sort of attention that he typically got on the PGA Tour. Again, we are fully anticipating that Bryson DeChambeau is going to play on Saturday for this 3:30 p.m. time. His agent, however, says he is undecided. Obviously, he still has an opportunity to win this Open Championship, Rex, because outside of the penalty, he was going to be in the final group. Now he's going off, I believe, Sam Burns, who shot 62. Yes, by the way, we had two 62s in this second round. It seems like that was a lifetime ago. The
lowest round in a men's major ever.
Correct, including a 4-foot miss by Lucas Herbert on the 18th green, which could have given him the men's major championship record. I do want to talk, just to put a fine point on this, Bryson DeChambeau's play, which I thought was phenomenal on Friday, which has sort of been the missed opportunity of this entire week, because here is a player who has historically and traditionally struggled in this championship. He seems to have figured something out. He's gone back to that crank driver. He's hammering it right down the middle in between the fairway bunkers that Nick Faldo said you had to avoid with 100% certainty. His iron play, which again has really been his bugaboo throughout the 2026 season, he has been terrific with these 3D printed irons. If there's anything, Rex, that has been lacking, it has been his putter, just as it was for Scottie Scheffler, just as it was for Rory McIlroy. From a ball striking standpoint, this is the best I've ever seen Bryson DeChambeau in an Open Championship, and it's by a wide margin.
Scottie and Bryson are both in the bottom third, maybe the bottom quarter of the field.
Bottom quarter for sure.
Yeah, they're losing more than a stroke around to the field on the putting greens. It gives you an idea what a ball striking contest this is. And you're absolutely right. You pointed out the 262s. I'll also point out John Rahm got a warning for throwing a club. You and I could probably sit here and talk for another 30 minutes.
Was it a club? Was it a slam? Was it a fling? Was it a toss?
It was somewhere in between.
Was there a fracas? Was there a melee? Was there a... And we really have to parse all the definitions, don't we?
I know we don't have time. This is a mini pod. I think we will probably get into this either Sunday night or maybe even next week. The idea that this is not right, the way this rule is being applied, because I keep going back to Joaquin Niemann was assessed a 2-stroke penalty at the U.S. Open for throwing a club. No video evidence exists, but the USGA felt strong enough to give him a 2-stroke penalty. We saw what John Rahm did today. He tossed the club. He threw the club. I don't know. And we can sit here and parse this however you want. He received a warning. Go back to the Masters. Sergio Garcia slammed a club on the ground, broke the driver head that went flying in the air. The idea that he received only a warning on that front. And they have made it clear that throwing the club, that's the line you can't cross. That's what we have to say. Well, it happened today.
But is it a throw or is it a toss or is it a slam? Who knows?
And that's the problem with the policy. If it's not going to be able to be applied equally and fairly, I don't know how this is going to work.
So John Rahm is playing with fire a little bit. He enters the weekend in a tie for eighth, a logjam in a tie for eighth, just 4 shots back at 4 under par. Another infraction, Rex, would trigger a 1-shot penalty, 2-shot penalty, potentially, depending on the severity, potential disqualification. But he is sort of on the RNA's. He's on the RNA's
double secret probation.
He's on the no-fly list as it relates to his behavior for the rest of the weekend. Let's talk about Lucas Herbert, because he is the 36-hole leader at this championship, 2 shots ahead of Jackson Suber and Cameron Young. Great to see Cameron Young playing well, the Players' Champion, who had really not done much of anything over the past couple months. Lucas Herbert, though, missed a 4-footer on the 18th green. I was out there. It was electric, Rex, for those last couple, I would say 30, 45 minutes. He had what he thought was his best shot of the day, burying a 7-footer for birdie on 16, comes to 17, looks like, boy, this is a gettable par 5, ends up giving himself a really good look after missing left in the dunes, missed that putt. We could have been looking at a 59, 60, 61 pretty easily. Instead, it's a 4-foot miss on 18. Just settling for a 62 and settling for a 2-shot lead at this championship.
When I spoke with him after the round, I asked him the first question was, at what point during a round like this do you realize that something special is happening? And he sort of laughed and he goes, I have to be honest. And it was on the third hole. He started birdie, birdie, birdie. And he goes, I realized how bad of a thought that was, that I had to reset. I had to wrestle myself out of this. And it was something that he really struggled with all day long, because he knew something was special was happening. I looked this year on LIV. He only has 1 round of 8 under par. Like, it's not as though he's been playing well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's coming off some of his best finishes of the year. I think he's 3rd or 4th on their points list right now. He's playing well. However, it's not as though this was in the making. This was a really special round.
It was really special. He did go wire to wire last year on LIV. Former winner. I believe he went in, Bermuda on the PGA Tour back in 2021 before.
Thanks for noticing.
And then bolting to LIV. But this was a special round. 8 approach shots inside 20 feet. Really can roll the rock. You mentioned the birdies to start. Went out in 28, tied the lowest 9-hole score in Open Championship history. Was 8 under through 12. Again, with 2 par 5s and a short par 4 to play. This could have been a historic round. He said he was disappointed afterward, but also proud of the effort. And obviously, he's going to relish this opportunity to be 2 shots ahead heading into the weekend. Anything else, Rex, of all of the things that happened on Friday here at Royal Birkdale, did you want to discuss before we head to the weekend?
No, I mean, I think you look at the leaderboard, and we touched on this last night. I love sort of the mix of the players we have out there. You mentioned Cameron Young, Ryan Gerard, who's been playing great this season, had another great round. He's had back-to-back rounds of 67. Sam Burns, obviously, he's had the second child born just a few weeks ago. But it's such a great mix. Robert McIntyre is still in the mix. Scottie Scheffler is only a couple of strokes back. The distraction is going to be there, and my guess is Bryson's going to be the distraction throughout the rest of the weekend, but it is still a compelling championship.
Bryson is going to be the distraction. He is going to be the storyline, and I think every other contender is loving that fact.
Sure.
Because they can fly a little bit under the radar, knowing that Bryson's going to be swallowing up all the oxygen in the room, as he typically does this weekend, even more so. I know...
Free Bryson.
Right. I know that Scottie Scheffler is an easy player to target here. He was exceptional, I thought, on Friday with his ball striking. It certainly appears that he has that under full control. Could not make anything. The 8-footer for par that he made on 18 was his longest putt made of the day. His ball striking, his position at this point in the championship, just 4 shots back. Certainly a danger man, to be sure. All right. Well, make sure you go to golfchannel.com in case there is some sort of breaking news on Saturday morning. Again, Bryson DeChambeau saying that he is, quote, undecided as to whether he will tee it up for the third round of this Open Championship, although the expectation after a near 50-minute range session is that he is going to be on that first tee. Also, make sure you sign up for the Live From newsletter with Rex and Live, which will be dropping in a couple of hours or on Saturday morning, whenever it is you get your newsletters. Rex and I will be back on Saturday evening to recap what promises to be a very eventful third round of the 154th Open Championship. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys in hopefully 24 hours.